Welcome, everybody, to the WWE podcast. We're going to get to the Money in the Bank match between CM Punk and John Cena that took place in Chicago in 2011. One of the most memorable Money in the Bank matches in the modern era for so many different reasons. And with Money in the Bank season, I thought that in the spirit of that season, we would cover one of the most volatile and memorable matches in the last 10 years. My God, it's been 9 years now. So we're going to get to that match as well as open the show with my thoughts on WWE releasing over 20 performers. So I'm going to get to that at the top of the show. And then I'm going to get to the fun stuff with wrestling nostalgia and maybe some other things thrown in. So stay right here. We're going to get everything started right now.
It's time for your weekly fix of wrestling nostalgia when we look at wrestling's past eras from the Attitude Era to the Reality Era.
I'd like to think that maybe this company will be better after Vince McMahon's dead, but the fact is, it's going to get taken over by his idiotic daughter and his doofus son-in-law and the rest of his stupid family.
To today. Here on the WWE Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the WWE Podcast. On this very somber wrestling nostalgia night, and not for the reasons that you're thinking. Nothing related to the pandemic. It's somber for those in WWE who have been notified that they are future endeavored. That is where the somberness comes from and where the sadness is, because many that thought they had a secure job now realize they don't. And you know what? I know that there are other places that potentially these individuals could go, and we'll go through some of them. I'm not going to give you my thoughts on every single one, but there are other places they could go, namely AEW. And certainly, I'm sure a few of them will probably end up there. But AEW isn't in need of every leftover WWE star that they let go, and you know, AEW picks up the scraps. I mean, AEW is what they say they are. They're an all-elite wrestling company. So just because you saw these mass releases, don't think they're automatically going to AEW, because AEW has a full roster, very limited spots. They're always looking for talent, but you know, there are such limited places that the talent can go to make a comparable living to where when they did in WWE. So it is certainly a black day for many within WWE, and not just the talent, but referees. Mike Chioda got released, and you know, I'm sure some ring crew and people have been getting or are getting now furloughed in WWE, which means they're employed by the company but not getting paid for maybe, I don't know, 1 day, 2 day, 3 days a week, or indefinitely. I mean, who knows? But this is all in response, they say, to the COVID-19. But I have a hard time believing that that is the only thing at play here. And I think that WWE, in part, is using the COVID-19 or coronavirus or whatever you want to call it, using that as a scapegoat to release talent that they probably would have released anyway. And so they're trying not to play the bad guys, and they're doing it out of response to the virus. And I think part of it is due to that. I mean, the fact is, WWE has lost out on a lot of revenue, particularly in WrestleMania, during WrestleMania season, WrestleMania itself, sponsors who probably are not happy with the ratings of Raw, tickets to the live events, merchandise being sold, I mean, you name it. So they're certainly taking a hit. They're not immune to this virus, I guess, no pun intended, but the fact is that right now lives are being affected in WWE, and whether they're using it as a scapegoat or not, I think in part they probably are, but I don't think it's in full. And for the talent that have been released, and to the referee or ring crew or whoever has been released, I do feel for them. And that's the risk of working in private industry, and particularly one that is such a high turnover with WWE. at times, and this isn't really to be unexpected. And if I'm correct, I do believe that WWE does have a habit of releasing talent around this time of year anyway. So that's why I say, is it really the virus? Right? I mean, they'll pin it on that, and I get the reasons why, the optics of it, that you're trying to pin it on something that's out of your control, and you're not the bad guy. You're just doing what the environment is telling you to do, and what you have to do to make sure you don't have a bad or potentially catastrophic financial situation. But I have a hard time believing, with their billion-dollar Fox deal, that they are in any kind of financial trouble, even despite the last 4 or 5 weeks of not being able to hold live events, and even the loss of WrestleMania. So take that for what it's worth. The fact of the matter is, how you spin it, whether they're blaming it on whatever, the fact of the matter is that these talent and employees are now no longer employed. And if you saw the list of stars, it continues to grow, and some that are very surprising, and we'll get to that in a minute, and some that are emotional. Some have taken to Twitter to be very emotional, and we'll get to that individual too in a moment. So, but guys, thank you for joining me on this somber wrestling nostalgia night. I promise, as before this is over, you should feel better about yourself, and we'll get to the CM Punk John Cena match that happened in Chicago in 2011 that just, I mean, blew the roof off the place. It was one of the best matches of the year. The storyline was believable. It was the summer of Punk. This was after CM Punk had dropped the pipe bomb and become what he was. And so we'll get to that storyline in just a minute. And the reaction, you guys know I put up some audio here, so you'll get to hear that that crowd, the commentary, and everything that comes with it as we listen to it together. So once again, thank you everybody for joining me. Thank you for supporting the show, downloading it, and reviewing me and rating me and everything else, and telling a friend about this show if you like it, or if you hate it and you just want to tell somebody how much you hate it, that's fine too. I mean, it is what it is. So guys, thank you so much. And you know, if you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do it at the WWE Podcast. You can also head on over to the website at WWEpodcast.com and take a look at all the shows there. You can also support the show by clicking on that support the show tab and going through Amazon. If there's an Amazon banner there, if you do any shopping on Amazon, I know I am. I mean, I have a package on it from Amazon. It seems like every other day. And all it does, if you go through that link, is a referral link, basically telling Amazon, hey, they sent you here, they should get something for it. And that's all it is. There's no tricks or hints or anything like that. I mean, thousands and thousands of affiliates do this. So it's just a great way to support the show and doesn't cost you anything extra. So I'd appreciate everyone who's done that so far. It has been much appreciated. And thank you. If you also would like your ad on this show, whether it's you want to promote your own podcast, you guys have heard the ads, you want to promote a health product, you want to promote a business, a website, whatever, as long as it's not adult content, you can get it on this show by heading over to Fiverr.com. That's Fiverr.com/Matt3166. Don't ask me why it's not WWE Podcast. I created it a long time ago, and they won't let me modify it. So I'm just kind of stuck with it. It's like that email that you create when you're 16 years old and you think you'll never need it again, and you end up using it for, you know, your 20s and all the way into your 30s, because then everything's attached to it and it's not worth creating a new email. It's one of those deals, but it's all good. So head on over there at Fiverr.com/Matt3166 if you want your ad on here and reach all of my listeners, and I'll be able to find a solution that meets your needs and a budget and everything else. So with all that said, with all that out of the way, we're going to get to the John Cena CM Punk match in a minute, but I want to give you guys an opportunity to speak, and that would mean that we're going to have the segment here now where I've asked you guys before, and some of you have taken me up, some of you are repeat contributors on this end, and I told you guys, hey, send me a voicemail. You have a question, you have a comment, you have something you want to get on this show, just send me that particular voicemail and I'll get it on the show. And that's what I'm about to do right now. So this one comes from Curtis Buck. Thank you so much for being a listener. I see your comments on Twitter, and this is you're returning to the show here. So I'm very curious to see what you have to say. And so let's take a listen, and I'll respond on the back end.
Hey, Matt, it's Curtis from Canada again. I just wanted your thoughts and opinions on possible Money the Bank winner this year. For me, I've been doing a lot of thinking, and I'm going to go with a dark horse this year. I'm going to go with Cesaro, if he's even in the match. You can put Cesaro in there and possibly have him cash in on Braun Strowman, maybe around SummerSlam or something like that. Cesaro more than deserves it by now. It's long overdue. And I just wanted to get your thoughts and opinions on that possibility and Cesaro himself. Like, I've always been a huge fan of him, and he definitely deserves way more than what he has now. Thanks, Matt.
All right, Curtis, thanks for the question. And yeah, this is a tough one because we don't have a definitive lineup for the Money in the Bank participants right now. And with no participants, it's hard to predict. The only thing we do have are a list of, so far, qualifying matches that are on April 17th, which is on Friday night on SmackDown, and then April 20th on Raw. So there are three qualifying matches on Raw. The one on SmackDown, Daniel Bryan's going to meet Cesaro in a qualifying match. And so for your prediction to come true, you obviously would have to have Cesaro win. So with that piece of it, I don't know if Cesaro would beat Daniel Bryan. I mean, you would think on paper that Daniel Bryan is a shoe-in to beat Cesaro. I mean, Cesaro has just been... I don't even think he's had his lips on a microphone in, I mean, months, maybe a year or more. We don't even know what Cesaro is anymore. Just kind of an athletic strong man to back up Sami Zayn's mouth. So... You know, I don't know. It is a dark horse for sure. That's a good way to put it. I don't think you're going to have Cesaro beat Daniel Bryan, but maybe Cesaro does by having someone screw Daniel Bryan to allow Cesaro to win. That would be the only way that I could see that happening. But again, he's got to get past that qualifying match, and it's going to be, I think, a challenge for Cesaro to do so, given where he's been positioned over the last several months in WWE programming. So, again, if Cesaro were to win and cash in, hell, I think the fans would be behind it. But the problem is we don't have a live audience. So it's kind of a tough thing to sell when there's no live audience to see how the fans would react. But, I mean, I'm on board for it. I just don't know if maybe the ship has sailed on Cesaro ever being that guy. You know, I just don't know. I don't have a high amount of confidence. But so my prediction... Looking at this, you have Daniel Bryan and Cesaro in a qualifying match. So I'm going to say Daniel Bryan takes that one. We have on Raw, Mysterio versus Murphy. That's a really tough one. Really tough. I'm going to say Murphy wins that. We have Aleister Black versus Austin Theory. I think Aleister Black probably wins that. And then Apollo Crews versus MVP. I think a really safe... Well, so far, again, these are only four... out of the potential six. I mean, I believe there are six men and six women in each mat, or each Money in the Bank ladder match. So again, without knowing the other two possible competitors, it's hard to gauge. If this was the last final card and there weren't two additional matches, I would say that Aleister Black probably, given his trajectory that he's been on in WWE over the last few months, you know, he's been tearing it down, so to speak, outside of a loss to AJ Styles at Elimination Chamber. He's been on a pretty straight upward trajectory. So Aleister Black, I think, would be my pick. So how about that? Thanks, Curtis, for the question. And anybody who would like to add themselves to this show in just the way that Curtis did, you can send me a voicemail from your phone to realwwepodcast@gmail.com, and I'll get your comment or question, rant, anything on the show. As long as it's PG and it's a minute or two and no longer, then no problem. I'd love to get other voices on this show. Okay, so let's run down the this daunted list of WWE releases that happened. That man, oh man, it's a tough one. It's a really tough one, and they're, you know, again, they're blaming this on the coronavirus budget, basically labeling as coronavirus budget cuts, and it's a tough one. You know, so you could see some of these coming, even if there wasn't a catastrophe going on right now. But you know, some of these are surprising. But let's take a look at this list here. We have Drake Maverick, okay, and Drake Maverick is a guy that went on Twitter. He was the one I mentioned at the beginning of the show, and he was teary-eyed talking about how, you know, he's grateful for this, but that he's not going to have a chance to say goodbye to some people that he's, you know, become very close friends with. And that's hard on him, but he's still going to compete in the NXT tournament, obviously losing. But he's going to have kind of that final send-off during that NXT tournament. So, again, if you want to go watch it, it's emotional, man. Take a look at Drake Maverick's timeline on Twitter. And you'll see what I'm talking about. Zack Ryder and Curt Hawkins. Hey, I mean, did anyone not see this coming? They're kind of a C show anyway. There's really not much to say. They are enhancement talent. So that's really no surprise there. It just isn't. I know that Zack Ryder has been with WWE for a long time. What, 14 years? It has, you know, been an up and down ride for him. I'm not surprised, though. The biggest surprise that I see out of this right now is Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows. I mean, that's a shocker. Because, yeah, they haven't exactly been produced as this super strong team and have been more or less lackeys for AJ Styles during his programs in particular, and most notably recently with The Undertaker. So, you know, I guess for them to go out, that's the best way for them to go out. I'm sure they didn't know at the time that they were going to be on the chopping block. But Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows, very surprising, you know, especially given the current state of WWE and really with the relationship they have with AJ Styles. And so not that we've seen AJ Styles since his loss at Mania, but when he comes back, I don't know. But they're probably not even going to address it. They're just going to have AJ Styles come back. It's going to be as if Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows didn't even exist. So we'll have to see what they do with AJ upon his return. But it's shocking. You know, I don't think that they ever really understood what they had with Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows. They brought them in, and here's at least one man's opinion here. When they first debuted and came into WWE, their first night was their hottest night out of their entire run in WWE. They came in, I remember they were in street clothes, and it felt real. They felt legitimate. They didn't have the WWE-ism or virus. That's probably a bad term right now. But they didn't have the WWE special touch that they like to give to their stars, their talent. They were just raw. They were from New Japan. We knew the relationship with AJ. And they, I think, came in blazing hot. And from that time, they were put into silly doctor skits, which killed them. And you know, and talking about the Good Brothers and their jokes and the hot Asian wife and the nerd stuff, I never was a fan of any of that. I would have kept them as legitimate badass guys that were heavies for AJ Styles, and they didn't do that. They didn't see it that way, and they became a comedy act. They would disappear for months on end. They became Raw Tag Team Champions. They would hold it for a few weeks and then drop it. They never really, I think, gave these guys a fair shot. But hey, what do I know? That's just my observation. Heath Slater, again, not truly surprising. I mean, they haven't done a whole lot with him. Okay, Eric Young, kind of same thing. It's not super surprising. Rowan, I think, is also up there. Maybe number two on the surprising list. You know, I guess, boy, it has been a rough couple of months for Rowan after, well, 6 months probably, when you look at the trajectory downward of his career over the last 6 months, going from maybe more than that, from over last summer, maybe 8-10 months ago, when he was the whodunit and he was the payoff to who attacked Roman Reigns. Remember the endless replays of people attacking Reigns and all that, and you know, trying to commit manslaughter, vehicular manslaughter. Maybe that was WWE's punishment to Rowan. Okay, maybe you're a liability. You can't be trying to kill stars. And they released him. I don't know. That's a bad joke. But Rowan released, and from where he was, main eventing pay-per-views with Roman Reigns, pushing him as a top heel to losing, and then being in a match. I think Aleister Black, and then Aleister Black beats him, and that really meant nothing. And then he carries around this mechanical spider that we, you know, finally realize what that is, and it was just a mechanical spider. To have, who was it, Drew McIntyre kill the thing, and that really was the last time we saw him after Drew McIntyre squashed it, and that was it, and Rowan's gone. So it's surprising given the last 8 months of where he was. Sarah Logan, that is not a surprise. You guys know how I feel about her. She doesn't know who the hell she is. She just looks like she looks like a person playing a wrestler. That's what she looks like. She doesn't look like an authentic athlete, performer, wrestler. And I'm sure there's one in there, but we haven't seen it. Okay? We have not seen Sarah Logan be who she probably feels she is, instead of just coming out there as this outdoorsy, I don't know what you are, I guess we're born in the woods. Were you raised by wolves? We don't know. We don't know anything about Sarah Logan. I don't even know if she's actually won a match. You know what? While I'm looking at this list here, I'm going to actually look up and see if Sarah Logan has ever won a match in her entire WWE career. So, I have it right here. Wow. Okay. So, Sarah Logan has indeed won a match in WWE. In fact, she's won 17 matches in WWE, 2 draws, and 52 losses. So what that equates to is a 73% loss record, loss percentage. 73% of the time she loses her matches, 24% of the time she wins them. I mean, I would think that upon her debut, a lot of those 17 are where you'll find them. Okay? There's just no way that you could possibly put Sarah Logan in any kind of credible category in WWE. I mean, you just look at her win-loss record. And apparently, you know, win-loss record should freaking matter in my estimation. But her overall record in wrestling in her entire career, I mean, she's actually been, wow. She's been in NXT, obviously NXT, Ring of Honor. She's been in Shimmer. She's been at WrestleCon, JCW. And she has an overall record of 131 losses and 88 wins, which comes out to almost a 40% win, a win percentage. So but if you're curious, and I can't believe I'm going through Sarah Logan's stats, but I've always been curious as to exactly how many matches she's won and lost. Her non pay-per-view wins were 84 in her entire career. Her non pay-per-view losses were 120. So, I don't know, take that for what it's worth. The fact is, Sarah Logan didn't feel like she ever belonged. I don't think she ever felt like who she was. And, you know, I hope she finds herself and reinvents herself. She's certainly young enough. She was born in 93. So she's in her 20s, right? Am I doing that wrong? She's still young. The fact is, she's got a long career ahead of her, and, you know, best wishes, and maybe she'll come back in a completely reinvigorated character. So let's move on. I can't believe I talked about Sarah Logan that damn long. So we move on to a couple other people here, and I'm not going to take too long here. No Way Jose, thank the Lord, actually. You know, I don't need to see the conga line anymore. Mike Chioda, longtime referee. That's actually a little bit surprising. Mike and Maria Kanellis, I guess the dominatrix storyline wasn't worth having them stick around. I mean, I don't know where the hell they were going with that, and whatever. EC3, man, talk about underutilized. Talk about a guy that you did nothing with other than have him beat one foot out the door Dean Ambrose is what you did with EC3. That's all you did. You had EC3 beat Dean Ambrose on his way out the door. I don't know if he did anything else. Not on WWE main television anyway. Aiden English. That's a bit surprising. Although we haven't seen him on TV, at least in I don't even know the last time I saw him on WWE TV, but certainly his best well-known for the Rusev pairing. Lio Rush, Primo, and Epico. I have one other big one. A couple other big ones that I didn't mention, but Lio Rush, he's from what I understand, he's been trouble backstage. Primo and Epico, is anyone really going to miss them? I mean, not that they're, not that there's anything personal here, but just in the importance and perspective of how WWE's positioned them, I don't think anybody's going to really miss them from a on-air perspective of, oh, I can't wait to tune in to see them. I mean, very unlikely, right? It's just a fact, nothing personal. But the other two huge names, Kurt Angle, huge name, but not surprising because he came back. Did what he's supposed to do. What is he going to do? He did everything he could have done upon his return. He was in a managerial role. He played the Raw general manager, although not very well. And then had a farewell tour that ended in Baron Corbin beating him at WrestleMania. And so that was it. There's not much more to do at that stage in his career. Was he going to be a manager? Right? I mean, there's not much more to do with Kurt after his return to WWE. And Rusev. That's surprising that Rusev is a guy that I don't think they ever truly believed could be a top main eventer. Not maybe the guy, but a guy in the main event level. And he's dipped his toe in it, but more often than not, he'd be in the U.S. title territory or in some silly storyline. It's going to be very interesting to see how Lana fares with all of this. And, I think that somewhere he will be very successful. And it could be AEW. I'm sure AEW is probably, for some of these people going, ooh, we could do something with so-and-so. We could do something with them. Rusev, I think, would be at the top of that list. He would be a guy that if you let go in AEW without the constraints and micromanagement of WWE's structure, I think could be a big deal in AEW. I think he would fit in well if he finds what he is. He's got I don't want him to be a comedy character. I want him to be a true top guy, in whether it's heel or face. He's shown he can do both. He's got a great sense of humor. I think he could be a top babyface in AEW with a fresh set of eyes and with complete creative control over who he wants to be. I think Rusev could be a great fit in AEW, but let's not put the cart before the horse here. It just happened. The wrestlers got notified, some of them today, maybe late last night. So let's take time to digest this. Everyone's thinking, everyone's going to be to mad rush to AEW. Let's pump the brakes here. I think it's going to be a select few, probably count them on one hand, that AEW is going to be number one interested in. And number two, that individual or individuals are going to be interested in going to AEW. And it's interesting to know too, very only outside of Maria Kanellis, no female performers have been chopped here. Or Sarah Logan as well. So Sarah Logan and Maria Kanellis, I mean, the majority here, 90% of these cuts were men. And I'm not making any kind of sexist statement. It's just there was a lot more fat to trim on the men's side. And proportionately, there are many more men on the roster than women. So outside of Sarah Logan, who, again, I don't know what to say about her, other than hope you find your identity and come back refreshed, because these people, they're gone, but doesn't mean they're never coming back. So take that for what it's worth, guys. But I wanted to mention that before I get to the wrestling nostalgia, which we're going to do right now. Let's get to it. I know that's what we're here for. So let's talk about CM Punk. Let's talk about John Cena. Money in the Bank 2011. Now, again, let's set the stage. CM Punk had come off of his pipe bomb promo that set the world on fire. And people were losing their minds over CM Punk. Punk was making it very clear to Vince McMahon that his contract was up at midnight the night of the pay-per-view and that he was going to leave with the WWE Championship. and there was nothing Vince could do about it. So that was the story going in. And John Cena at the time was still the man in WWE. He was still the guy that was, he was still the golden boy. He was the top of the mountain. He was the corporately created and selected champion. And much like Roman Reigns, John Cena actually has a personality, right? John Cena actually, while he was the corporate selection, made it feel at times that he was deserving of the selection by showing you how good he is, and rightfully so. So you have the anti-hero of CM Punk. You have the corporate choice of John Cena. You put that together, and it's a recipe for an explosion. On top of that, add the fact that this is for the WWE Championship. This is also in Chicago, CM Punk's hometown. Allegedly, this could be CM Punk's last night in WWE. He's saying he's going to take the championship and run. So let's see if that pans out. And let's just take a listen to the entrance here for CM Punk and for John Cena. I really think it's worth listening to. So let's do that. So I forgot about some of that commentary, trying to still defiantly pawn off the reaction for CM Punk because he's simply in his hometown. That certainly added fuel to the fire. Okay, but you can't tell me that the crowd, even if it was in Dallas, Texas, or anywhere, I mean, it doesn't matter, I don't think, Pittsburgh, I don't think it would have mattered of the crowd reaction that CM Punk would have gotten. It would have been maybe a little bit less subdued because it's not, you know, from Chicago. And again, I'm not saying that's not a factor, but the audience or the announcers, Jerry Lawler and Michael Cole, instructed to say that it's a partisan crowd. He's welcomed like a hero. They are his followers. Come on. Just stop it. I mean, it's that defiance to position John Cena as a heel in any way. And so, I don't know. It's just so corporate to say something like that. I'm surprised they didn't call it Bizarro World or it's non-traditional fans or whatever the hell, right? So let's now take a listen to the reaction from, well, his opponent.
Thank you.
and gentlemen, that man, John Cena, he's a big-time player. It is pressure time for him tonight. No one has ever faced circumstances like this. Not only is his WWE title on the line, but think about this moment. The history, the legacy, the future of this entire company rests on the shoulders of that man.
It just may be more pressure than John Cena can handle.
John Cena is the face of the company now. But tonight, will he be hero or will he be GOAT?
So there we go with the entrances. And my God, again, the positioning of why John Cena is getting the reaction he is. He's in enemy territory. Look, he would have been in enemy territory no matter what city this was. It would have just been that way, 90-10 split, maybe even higher than that. CM Punk, I think we forget just how on fire he was and what he did to turn WWE on a dime with one single pipe bomb, one promo, one time on the microphone to really just spin WWE on its axis. Because if you look back at the Ruthless Aggression era, well, the PG era from 2008 till 2011, there wasn't a whole lot going on. You had the Nexus. You still had John Cena as the guy. I mean, he was the top guy of the company. He is what Michael Cole said he was. He was the face of the company. And WWE had become much more corporately structured and more micromanaged on the promos. And it was a much more it was a softer product. It was, everything became about the brand, of which we see today. Stephanie McMahon would love to make it everything about the brand and make sure that nothing is ever done without thinking about the brand. I'm sure she's well aware of that. But it really started to turn here, and CM Punk was the anti-establishment to that. CM Punk represented what the fans were clamoring for, what they wanted, an authentic, tell-it-like-it-is voice of the voiceless, as he famously had said. And that's true, because he was truly thinking and saying what the fans felt. He was unhooked, unhinged, and this was CM Punk's year. And with what they did here in trying to, again, position Cena as somehow this is not a normal reaction for Cena, it may not have been a normal reaction for Cena against anyone else. Against CM Punk, in how white hot he was, there was nobody that could touch Punk. So, again, I know what they're trying to do, and I love when they try to protect the babyface as why they're getting booed, especially their top guy. And we've seen it with Roman Reigns in years that are after this, from 2015 forward. But this, it's just so transparent what they were trying to do. But with this match, again, the crowd is white effing hot, and in Chicago. And the stipulation too, I forgot to mention, was that if Cena loses, he's fired, because Vince had said to him, "You lose this, you're fired," because of CM Punk's threat to take the belt and basically run away with it. In which, when you think about the logistics of that, first of all, it's a work, so CM Punk isn't going to actually take the title and leave. And number two, even if he actually did that and it was a shoot, well, guess what? You have your championship belt gone, but you can always crown a new champion, right? It's not necessarily about the belt. The belt represents the championship. It represents a position on the roster, represents that you're the champion. And new belts can always be made. So if it's about the prop, it's about the physical piece of glass, or about the physical piece of diamonds and gold and leather, then you could have always produced another one. So the logistics of this are a little screwy. Again, that's kind of what I do, is overanalyze sometimes. But this match was, the quality of it was just very, very good. And I'll get to another clip in a minute. But the crowd, it's amazing. Man, this is the opposite of what we have now. This is the opposite of what we have now, with a white hot audience and a empty arena. I mean, you want something to make you feel better about a crowd being there? Go to 2011 Money in the Bank, the main event on July 17th, 2011, and you will be inspired. You will get the goosebumps. This is the type of match that, if you're a wrestling fan, this is what makes you love wrestling, is this type of crowd, this hot, for a match, that care this much about a match. This isn't the fans just trying to be rebellious, or this isn't the fans just like to have fun, or WWE tries to soften any type of reaction that they aren't, that the fans aren't aligning their reactions with what WWE would like them to. They try to soften the reasons why the fans are acting the way they do, that it's about having fun and they're non-traditional and it's, you know, nonsense. It's a bizarre world, nonsense, right? This is true emotion from an audience. And I think that 99% of the time when crowds react the opposite to what WWE is presenting it as, it's true emotion, right? Fans pay their damn hard-earned money to tell you how they truly feel. That's why we're wrestling fans, is because your job is to get us emotionally invested. And when we're not emotionally invested, we're going to tell you, you know. So, but anyway, let's get into some of the nitty gritty of this match, and we'll then revisit, and let's go. So right there, obviously, you guys can only hear it and not see it, but we had CM Punk dodge the five-knuckle shuffle after John Cena attempted it, and then did a suicide dive. Now, you guys know how much I despise suicide dives because of the sheer volume that are done on a nightly basis on WWE programming. I mean, again, I'm telling you, I really believe that there's some kind of quota in WWE that we must match X number of suicide dives per show. I really believe that somehow that's what WWE is putting out to their talent. I mean, it's just insane. But in this case, we had John Cena do the five-knuckle shuffle or attempt it. The crowd, obviously, as you heard, was extremely volatile towards John Cena. Punk hits him in the head with a kick. And then John Cena gets tossed to the outside, and Punk went for a suicide dive that actually had, you guessed it, meaning. It actually had repercussions, because it wasn't just a spot. It wasn't just something that was done to be done. It had meaning, and it actually, you can hear the crowd react to it. It wasn't the fourth time in the match that this was done. So, amazing how much moves can matter when you lower the rate at which they're done. So, again, these two had amazing chemistry. They've always had really good chemistry, and no more than now. And the crowd is probably the best part of this whole thing. As great as these two were, the crowd reaction, and maybe I'm just being a little bit partial to the fact that we have no crowd right now, but boy, tell me they don't add to this. I mean, my God, but on top of that, you had the crowd, I really believe, would have literally rioted if John Cena had won this match. I mean, I know there were signs all over that said, if Cena wins, we riot. But the fact is, they were so hot, I really believe that if John Cena had won that and retained clean, that people would have walked out, thrown crap in the ring. You would have seen chairs in the ring. It would have been an old school, you know, F this. To, you know, a big F you to WWE. WWE had no choice but to put the belt on Cena. I think the biggest negative reaction that Cena had gotten in his entire career, number one, was probably this. Number two was a very close one, ECW One Night Stand back in 2006 against RVD, when he defended the belt against RVD and lost it to RVD. And I think the WWE's hand was again forced there. So those are probably the top two negative reactions John Cena has ever received. And maybe number three is against The Rock. Number four, maybe against Triple H at WrestleMania. Not against Batista. I think Batista was also kind of a baby face that should have been a heel. But nonetheless, let's keep going and listen to some more audio from this match as we start to close things out. And things get a little wonky, but let's take a look. Or listen, rather, for you guys.
So it looks like he's leaving one way or the other. Maybe making pizzas down the road. Cena countered. Gut wrench. Cover. Come on, John. Get him here. Got the leg two hook. And a kick out. Man.
John Cena had the leg hook right there. Did everything right.
Yeah, I agree with you. Every time Cena goes to the mat, he grabs the knee.
He is trying to.
And look at that.
There you go. I'm telling you.
He's spin again. And again, Punk able to counter.
Whoa.
This time, Cena could be out. Cena could be out. Knee to the jaw for a second
right
time.
On the chin.
And the bulldog.
That's it. That's it. If Cena Punk covers John Cena.
Cena may be out. I don't think Cena has a clue where he's at. Two knees to the jaw, followed by the bulldog.
All right, so the match continues here. The crowd was in this from start to finish. Absolute start to finish. I'm trying to get to the finish of the match here because things get a little screwy with some interference from, oh God, do I dare say his name? Well, let's take a listen, and you know who I'm talking about.
A little bit of space, I'm going to tell you, that's calculated. That's not something that just happened by accident.
Look at this. Mr. McMahon, the chairman of the WWE, flanked on his left by John Laurinaitis, the executive vice president of talent relations. One of the men verbally attacked by CM Punk a couple of weeks ago on Raw. Mr. McMahon realizing the severity of this situation.
Why are they after?
Well, watching it firsthand, I guess. I mean, this is Mr. McMahon's entire legacy on the line here. CM Punk in trouble. John Cena, STF again.
And Mr. McMahon has come for the bell.
Mr. McMahon, I believe, trying to signal to the timekeeper. And he sent it later tonight. He's down the right hand by Cena.
What the hell?
So what happened there was John Laurinaitis comes out and Vince McMahon instructs him to tell the timekeeper to ring the bell because Vince is trying to screw CM Punk because of CM Punk's threats and his insults over the last several months to the chairman. And Laurinaitis gets cut off at the pass by John Cena, who ends up clocking him, and the crowd enjoyed that because they didn't want to see this match end any more than we did in that manner. So that, I think, really saved Punk's career, or saved John Cena from truly turning heel. If he had accepted Laurinaitis to do what he did there, then I think that you would have seen that would have been a true heel turn, of which, I mean, we all know what we think about John Cena heel turns. So let's take a listen to the finish of this match, and then we'll wrap up our thoughts.
John Cena just told the boss, not that way. We're going to do it my way. And CM Punk! GTS connecting! GTS connecting! Chicago with the W. Championship.
So we had CM Punk obviously win that match, and then Vince McMahon on the ramp, or the aisleway rather, just looking on in disgust. And, you know, I don't think this is too far from the truth. Yeah, I know that this is storyline. We know that this was pre-planned. We know that this was predetermined. And Vince McMahon standing there looking at Punk the way he did felt very authentically real. And I believe it to be real because I'm sure deep down Vince McMahon doesn't look at CM Punk as a guy that should be getting the reaction that he does. And looks at him and goes, what did these people see in him? You know that deep down Vince is truly saying that. And the fans, again, forcing the hand of WWE here. And this was like the Daniel Bryan story before there was a Daniel Bryan story. And obviously we know what happened at WrestleMania 30, you know, a couple of years later. But this was the Daniel Bryan story before the Daniel Bryan story was a thing. And then, well, let's take a listen here. Vince gets on commentary and take a listen.
Stop it. Stop the music. Stop it. Stop it right now. Cut that. Cut it, music. Cut it. Cut that music. Cut it.
All right. Give me Alberto Lider. Come on. Cash it in. Get Alberto Lider now. Come on. Let's go. Get him out here.
Oh, my God. Mr. McMahon just called for Alberto Del Rio, who earlier tonight won the Raw Money in the Bank ladder match. Which means that Del Rio can cash in at any time for a WWE Championship. And the boss has demanded that he do it right now.
And here he comes.
And here comes Del Rio. Alberto Del Rio looking to cash it in. And Punk catches him with the right hand. And CM Punk.
So Vince McMahon's plan B of Alberto Del Rio trying to cash in failed, and we have a CM Punk celebration, the fans losing their minds, and it was just the quality of the match was top notch on top of it. So even if the crowd wasn't as hot, it still was a very good, well laid out, nicely paced match. Again, amazing that you can have a 5-star match. I put this pretty darn close. I put it at 4.5 stars without having to do the crazy flips and everything else that's just over-magnified as important to a match instead of story, instead of emotional investment. Because moves are very superficial. Moves are a vehicle to tell a story, not a means to an end. So that, I think, is the key part of why today's wrestling is extremely superficial on the level of using moves as the way to tell the story, when in fact the story should dictate what the moves are, if that makes sense. So that was, again, if you haven't seen CM Punk, John Cena in 2011, I always say this for my nostalgia because it's always, I think, important if you're a wrestling fan to see that. And it's so nice, even audibly, right, to see or hear a crowd reacting. It's just so refreshing. It's just breath into my soul as a wrestling fan to hear an audience reacting, especially one of that magnitude, almost unfairly to one of that magnitude, because I don't know of too many crowd reactions that are that white hot. I mean, that was about as close as a 100% crowd reaction as you can get to a match. And just great match, great psychology. Everything there was just top notch. So head on over to the network or YouTube. I mean, let's face it, there's other places to go other than paying $9.99 a month to see it. But well worth the time to see this, and it will give you chills. It will give you chills, and one of those things. If you're a wrestling fan, you will understand why this is so damn good. And it will remind you why you are a wrestling fan. So, anyway, I hope you guys enjoyed the nostalgia tonight. I know that it's a bit of a somber night if you're a WWE employee / independent contractor, and we're on that selected list. And from what I hear, maybe there's more coming with Rusev and Kurt Angle and Carl Anderson and Luke Gallows at the top of that list. And you know, some of it was very surprising. I went through. I know I was said I wasn't going to go through the list, and then I ended up doing it anyway. But I wanted to give you my quick thoughts on each release and whether I felt it was surprised or maybe they could somehow show up in AEW. Everyone points to that as, oh, they're going there next. Again, let's pump the brakes. I think we'll see a handful of them in AEW at some point. But AEW is not the... It's not SmackDown. It's not the land of opportunity of just let's hire everyone WWE fires. I mean, that's not what AEW is about, and they will be the first ones to tell you that. But anyway, let's move on, you guys. I want to thank you for joining me tonight. I'll be back on either Saturday or Sunday with your week in review with a co-host to be determined yet. I will figure that out as the days go on. And tomorrow, AEW and NXT. Friday is one or the other. I try not to release the AEW and NXT shows too close together. I like to space them out. So if I release one tomorrow morning, maybe I'll release the other one in the afternoon or maybe early Friday morning. So those reviews will be coming your way. And then again, week in review. And we're back on schedule. It's Money in the Bank. And I'm excited for it. Money in the Bank is an exciting pay-per-view, albeit in an empty arena, as we continue to suffer as wrestling fans to see that. But we'll be back, I'm sure, sooner than later, hopefully with a live audience and getting our souls refreshed with a live crowd reaction that really just is it's the soul of what wrestling is. So, alrighty, guys, thank you so much for joining me again. You can follow me on Twitter at the WWE Podcast. You can head on over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. If you want all of these shows without any ads, you can go there. And you can also head on over to support the show on the website and click on the Amazon link and do your shopping through Amazon there. And it kicks back a little bit of whatever you buy to the show. Or if you just want to do something even easier, just give me a 5-star rating and review on iTunes, which is now Apple Podcasts. So lots of ways to support the show. And I appreciate everyone. Head on over to my email if you want to send me a voice memo and get your voice on this show at realwwepodcast@gmail.com. Send that email with a voice memo there. So thank you so much, guys. As always, I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks for listening to the WWE Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on your favorite podcast app so you don't miss a show, or head to WWEPodcast.com. And for all of these shows ad-free, head over to patreon.com/WWE Podcast. Until then, we'll see you next time.